What if the secret to a lifelong love of your sport wasn't just in how you train your body? What joy, possibility, and performance could be unlocked through the power of mental fitness? Well, you're about to find out. Welcome to the MindFit Athlete Podcast. If you want to figure out what's holding you back, then you're in the right place. Now, here's your host, John Ray.
Welcome to the MindFit Athlete Podcast. This is the podcast where we explore the intersection of endurance sport and the science of a happier life. I'm John.
I'm Scott.
And I'm Emily.
This episode is answering some direct requests we've had to drop deeper into the whole area of saboteur mindsets. You asked, and we've listened. Our plan is to work up a library for all 10. So, Scott, Emily, let's begin with a scene I think many of our listeners will recognize. You wake up for that big training session. It's a key brick workout, the one you've been building towards. But from the moment your feet hit the floor, it just feels off. The weather seems miserable, windy and cold. Your gears aren't indexing properly on the bike. Your legs feel like lead on the first few kilometers of the run. That nagging ache in your calf is back. And to top it all off, your training partner, who you're normally neck and neck with, just seems to be just ticking over effortlessly, while you are wading through treacle. It's easy on days like that to feel like the entire world is conspiring against you.
It really is. The weather is against you. Your bike isn't as high spec or well maintained as it should be. Maybe you're actually injured, and that's just your luck, right? Or maybe someone's given you a virus, and that partner, he's just got it in for you today. What we're talking about is that feeling, that sense that you're being acted upon by outside forces. You just can't catch a break. The world is just unfair, and the odds are stacked against you.
And thinking this way is one of the most draining experiences an athlete can have. It's where the joy of sport goes to die. And today, we're going to look that feeling right in the eye.
We're going deep on one of the most common and most destructive mental roadblocks that gets in our way, a mindset known as the victim saboteur.
And we need to say this right from the get-go. This can be a tough one to confront. It can feel like a provocative personal accusation. So if you're listening to this, our invitation is to approach this with curiosity and a huge dose of self-compassion. This isn't about beating yourself up. It's about getting powerful information that can genuinely set you free.
And Scott, before we dive into the specifics of the framework, I think it's incredibly important that we draw a very clear line in the sand.
Yes, thank you, John. This is crucial. Before we define what the victim saboteur is, let's be absolutely clear about what we are not talking about. We are not talking about people who are victims of genuine trauma or abuse, be that physical, psychological, sexual, or emotional. That experience is real. It is valid. And it often requires professional care and support.
Absolutely. 100%.
So if you are a person who has experienced trauma that is adversely impacting your day-to-day life, the appropriate and courageous first step is to speak with your GP or a qualified health professional. The conversation we are about to have is about a far more common and what you might call low-grade internal mindset. It's a pattern of thought that can affect any of us, regardless of our history.
That is a vital distinction. Thank you for making that so clear. So, with that important clarification made, Scott, what exactly is this victim saboteur?
I think we've all heard the phrase he or she's playing the victim. We might well have met people at work who we might consider have a victim mentality. What we mean is that they are easily defeated by setbacks, that they give up easily, or that they expect things to go wrong for them. They are generally glass half full.
I think we all know people like that, and most of us have been that person at one time or another.
Well, it's not surprising then that the victim is one of the 10 core saboteurs identified in the best-selling book, Positive Intelligence. Saboteurs are essentially the negative voices in your head. You can think of them as an internal enemy that generates stress, anxiety, and self-doubt. And they are rooted in the parts of our brain responsible for survival. The victim saboteur's master lie, its core belief is this: I am powerless and bad things just happen to me. When this saboteur hijacks your thinking, you begin to see yourself as being at the mercy of external events. It's not just a bad day, it's proof that the universe is against you.
And how does that manifest? What does it sound like in an athlete's head?
Oh, it's a whole soundtrack. It's the voice that says, I can't do it, Or, of course I got a flat tire, I have the worst luck. Or, what's the point in entering that race? The person who always beats me is on the start list anyway. It's the constant focus on what you can't control. Your poor performance is because of the bad weather, your coach's flawed plan, your rival's lucky break, the referee's bad call. The victim encourages you to blame, to make excuses, and to focus on everything that's going wrong.
And that becomes a devastating self-fulfilling prophecy. There's a classic psychological term for this, learned helplessness.
That's Martin Seligman's famous work from the 60s, isn't it? Remind us of the discovery there.
Exactly. In his experiments, he observed that animals who were repeatedly subjected to a stressful situation they couldn't control would eventually stop trying to escape it, even when the opportunity for escape was presented. They had learned that they were powerless. And when they put these animals in a new situation where they could easily escape, they wouldn't even try. They just accepted the discomfort. They had learned to be helpless.
And that is exactly what happens on the race course or in a tough training session. We carry the memory of a past failure where we felt powerless and we just lie down mentally when the next challenge hits, even though we are stronger and more capable now. We stop looking for the escape route.
And that's the devastating neurological reality we're talking about. By focusing on powerlessness, you are literally strengthening the same neural pathways Seligman identified. You're training your brain to give your power away. Over time, you don't just feel helpless, you begin to act helpless, looking for sympathy instead of solutions. The victim wants to be rescued, not empowered.
So let's connect this directly to performance. You're on the starting line of a triathlon or a marathon. How does this mindset actively wreck your potential on race day?
It dismantles it piece by piece. The first and most obvious impact is a deep sense of self-doubt and defeatism. The victim whispers that success is for other people. You start a race not just hoping to do well, but already assuming you won't be competitive. You end up playing not to lose instead of playing to win.
And that is poison. Your whole energy is focused on avoiding mistakes, which makes you tight, hesitant, and slow. Playing to win is about freedom. It's about courage. It's about expressing your fitness. The victim makes that impossible. It also creates a crippling fear of failure. For the victim, a loss or a mistake isn't just a data point to learn from. It's a personal indictment. It's final proof that you aren't good enough. That fear prevents you from taking the very risks that lead to breakthroughs.
So it keeps you locked in a state of playing it safe.
Exactly. You won't try a new race strategy. You won't go with that breakaway group on the bike because the internal voice says, you'll just blow up and embarrass yourself.
This leads to the next piece, a relentless external focus. Your attention shifts from what you can control, your pacing, your nutrition, your form, to what you can't. You start obsessing over the course conditions, your opponents, a piece of equipment that isn't perfect. This is a very convenient way to avoid taking personal responsibility for your own performance, and, more importantly, for the work required to improve it.
And I imagine this has a significant impact on an athlete's relationship with their coach.
It's devastating. How can you learn if you can't truly hear feedback? The victim mindset perceives constructive criticism as just more bad news. It's not helpful information, it's another confirmation of its negative worldview. See, even my coach thinks I'm terrible. This completely blocks the trust and vulnerability you need to have a great coaching relationship. And honestly, it can turn an athlete into an energy vampire. A person who is constantly complaining, seeking sympathy, and projecting negativity can suck the positive energy right out of a training group. Morale is contagious and a victim mindset is spreading the flu.
And underneath all of this is the physiological reality. Living in a state of perceived powerlessness is incredibly stressful. Your brain is marinating in cortisol. This harms your sleep quality. It lengthens your recovery time, and it makes you far more vulnerable to both illness and injury. So the mindset that tells you you're weak is, ironically, making you physically weaker.
It strikes me that the biggest casualty here isn't just race results, but the simple enjoyment of the sport.
John, you have hit the absolute heart of it. The victim saboteur is a joy thief. Remember why you started your sport? For the love of it, right? The feeling of freedom, of strength, of connection. The victim systematically strips all of that away. It forces you to develop a negative perception filter. You could have a fantastic race, a personal best even, but you spend the entire drive home obsessing over the one person who beat you or the one split that was slightly off. It filters out all the evidence of your success.
And this directly blocks the flow state. Flow, that magical feeling of being completely immersed and energized, is where peak performance and peak enjoyment meet. It requires a quiet mind, a sense of focus and control. The victim's constant chatter, the self-doubt, the worry, the blame, makes it physiologically impossible to get into flow.
And it makes you play small. The victim wants you to stay in your comfort zone where it feels safe. You avoid the challenging races, you duck the tough training partners, you put off learning that difficult new skill like open water sighting. This avoidance of risk robs you of the deep, soul-filling satisfaction that comes from growth and mastery. Your sport, which should be a source of energy, becomes just another source of stress and grief.
This all paints a very bleak and very compelling picture of the damage this mindset can do. Which begs the question, Scott, if it's so destructive, why on earth would anyone hold on to it?
Because in the very short term, it offers some sneaky psychological rewards. Our survival brain is fundamentally wired to seek safety, pleasure, and the easiest path. Sport is often uncomfortable, demanding, and risky for our ego. The victim offers what feels like a safe way out.
Can we just examine the rewards you talked about?
The most common is attention and sympathy. When you're the victim, people often rally around you. They offer support. They listen to your complaints. This can feel validating and make you feel cared for, even if it's for negative reasons. Secondly, it's a powerful tool for avoiding responsibility. If your poor performance is not your fault, then you don't have to do the hard, uncomfortable work of changing your training, your diet, or your strategy. Blaming the weather is so much easier than admitting you didn't do your strength work.
It's the ultimate excuse for inaction. It gives you the perfect reason not to try your hardest. After all, if the system is rigged against you, why bother? It's a way to protect your ego from the potential pain of giving your all and still coming up short. The sofa and a pizza feel a lot safer to the victim than the starting line.
You know, this isn't just an individual battle we're talking about. And this is where, if I'm being honest, it gets quite personal for me to think about. I've seen how these patterns aren't just inside our own heads. They can be woven into the very fabric of a family, a team, and even an entire culture.
That's a powerful idea. What do you mean?
I was talking with another athlete from Northern Ireland recently, and he asked me something that just stopped me in my tracks. He had been in the States, and he was struck by the contrast in the common greeting we have back home compared to what he heard in Seattle. You ask someone, "How are you?" or "How's it going?" And the stock standard reply back home isn't, "I'm good, thanks," or even, "I'm very well." And you would never, ever, ever, ever hear, "I'm awesome." The stock reply is, "Not bad." And he was absolutely spot on. Not bad. That simple two-word response speaks volumes. It's a conditioned habit, a shared narrative we have at a society level. A community that has shared a long and difficult history, be it economic hardship, political conflict, social injustice, well, it's easy to see how that might develop into a collective victim narrative.
Wow, that's a great catch. I hadn't really considered how a community could generate its own collective mindset.
I think it really can. A cultural story gets passed down. It shows up in the language, the humour, the expectations. Now, not bad can be a powerful statement of resilience. A way of saying, given everything, I'm still standing. I have huge respect for that. But I also have to wonder, what else is it doing? In its own quiet way, could it be reinforcing a belief that great or even good isn't really a possibility? Or that maybe it's tempting fate to even say it out loud?
And this is where it gets so fascinating from a saboteur perspective. Because that not bad response, which can feel like a victim or even an avoider keeping expectations safely low, is a cultural norm. It also occurs to me that there's a flip side to this. In a different culture, someone always replying awesome might not be coming from their genuine wise sage. They could be driven by a hyperachiever saboteur that feels pressured to project success, or a pleaser saboteur who thinks that's the positive answer everyone wants to hear.
Yes, and that's just as likely to be socially conditioned too. I guess this over-the-top, way-too-positive response is where we get the notion of toxic positivity from. The point I'm getting at isn't that one phrase is better than another. The point is more to ask ourselves, is this response coming from my authentic self, or is it a conditioned, limiting pattern I've inherited? Let's be honest here. How many people ever check in with themselves and give a truthful answer to the "how are you" question? The answer is almost always socially conditioned.
John, I think this example you've given shows exactly how saboteurs evolve. Of course, there's an individual genetic predisposition, but as children, we're picking up cues from our family, local community, and even national culture. We're like this sponge soaking up our environment and adapting to it in a way that our brain senses will serve us best.
I'd like to add a little to what you and Scott were saying. I'm thinking that a not too bad, quite downbeat mindset can have a major impact for an athlete. What I mean is, do you allow yourself to set truly audacious goals? Or does a little voice, a voice that sounds a lot like your family or your hometown, whisper, "Don't get ahead of yourself," or "Don't get too big for your britches"? Maybe that voice is stopping you fully celebrating your victories and really engaging fully with life. I mean, where's the joy in not bad? I think that to perform at your peak, you have to believe that awesome is at least possible for you.
A community stuck in a victim mindset is always looking back at its wounds. But a community that adopts a more sage view can say, yes, this difficult history happened. We acknowledge the hurt and the horror of it. And given that this is where we find ourselves, how can we convert that experience into a gift? Can we create something positive and beneficial? We might even become aware of unique strengths this painful experience forged in us. Perhaps the gift is resilience, a dark wit, a lack of pretentiousness, a deep sense of connection, and a profound ability for empathy. Recognizing these deeper collective patterns in myself was a game changer. It helped me see that some of my most stubborn limiting beliefs weren't even mine. I had simply absorbed them. And seeing that, that was the first, most critical step toward choosing a different response. A response that matches and serves my own ambitions far better. So, a lot to reflect on there.
You know, just thinking about what you're saying, I have a question. It's about J.D. Vance's book, Hillbilly Elegy. Is that book an example of the community victim mindset we were just exploring?
I think it's a perfect case study, but perhaps not in the way one might think. It's less a straightforward example of the mindset and more a powerful exploration of the very conditions that create it. This is where we have to be so precise. There's a crucial difference between acknowledging real hardship and adopting a victim saboteur mindset.
That's the whole game, right there.
Exactly. Hillbilly Elegy does an incredible job of documenting legitimate grievances and systemic challenges, the collapse of industry, the social decay, the epidemic of addiction. Acknowledging that pain and seeing that reality for what it is, that's actually the sage mindset, seeing life just as it is. The sage deals with what's true, no matter how difficult. The victim saboteur hijacks that reality and adds a devastating filter. And because of all this, we are powerless. It will never get better. We are doomed, and it's someone else's fault. So I don't see the book itself as an example of the mindset. I see it as a memoir about being steeped in a culture where that saboteur voice is incredibly loud and often mistaken for the truth.
And that's the battle for every single person in that situation. It's the tug of war between the collective narrative that says, you can't escape this, this is just who we are, and that individual spark of the sage that asks, what can I control right now? What is my next best step? Vance's story, at its core, is about his struggle to choose a different narrative for himself. It's about finding personal agency when the community around you is telling you that you have none. That is a coaching journey in its rawest form. The fight to believe that awesome is possible when the dominant story is not bad.
So the final appraisal is that the book isn't a manifesto for the victim mindset, but rather a dispatch from the front lines of the battle against it. It documents the very real wounds of a community, which is a vital and valid act, and at the same time, it tells the story of one person's complicated and imperfect attempt to not be defined by those wounds. It's a case study in the fight for personal agency. A really sharp question, Emily, thank you. This feels like the perfect time for our mid-episode break. We'll try and lift the mood a little. For anyone training along with us, here's 3 minutes of pick yourself up at 120 beats per minute to lock in your cadence. We will be right back.
Turn your world around. a big change, one step at a time. Find a new way to turn your world around. I know you're strong in your smile and full of so much potential. If you want something to
Welcome back. I want to pick up on the self-awareness John was talking about. That is always the most essential first step. It's what allows us to move from being caught in the trap to finding a way out. Positive intelligence's research shows that every saboteur is an exaggeration of an underlying strength. Your tendency towards the victim mindset means you likely possess some incredible positive qualities that have just been pushed into overdrive. If you can learn to dial back the victim, you'd find these superpowers.
Exactly. For instance, people prone to the victim saboteur often have a capacity for deep empathy and sensitivity. You feel things deeply. This is what allows you to connect with others and understand their struggles. When it's not distorted by negativity, this makes you an incredible teammate and leader. You also likely have high emotional awareness. You are highly attuned to your own feelings. This is a powerful tool for self-reflection and growth when it's harnessed correctly.
And at its root, the victim's desire to be rescued is a distorted version of a vital human strength, the ability to ask for help. Knowing when you need support from your community is essential. Don't think that the goal is to eliminate these traits. Rather, it's to rescue them from the saboteur. It's to channel that empathy into self-compassion, to use that emotional awareness for constructive reflection, and to ask for help to empower yourself, not to be rescued.
Okay, so the path forward isn't to fight ourselves, but to reclaim our strengths. Emily, let's make this practical. What should be our game plan? Or, if you like, what's the training plan for someone listening right now who recognizes this voice in their own head?
I love that you call it a training plan, John, because that's exactly what it is. Right now, the neural pathways in your brain that fire up the victim are like a 3-lane motorway, wide, paved, and heavily used. The new empowered pathway you want to build is like a tiny, overgrown country lane. Your job is to intentionally send more traffic down that new road until it becomes your default route. This takes conscious, repeated effort. The first step is simple, but not easy. Awareness. You have to catch the saboteur in the act.
So just notice the thought?
Just notice it. Learn to recognize the victim's voice and the feeling it creates inside you, that familiar cocktail of powerlessness, self-pity, and resentment. And when you feel it, just label it without judgment. Ah, there's my victim saboteur again. That simple act of naming it creates separation. It reminds you that it is a voice in your head. It is not you.
Once you've spotted it, you can move to step two, intercept and reframe. This is where you activate what we call your sage. The sage is the deep, wise part of you that knows every circumstance can be turned into a gift or opportunity. The first sage step is to accept what is. A storm cancels your outdoor ride. A rival beats you. You get a puncture. You cannot change these facts. Fighting reality is a colossal waste of precious mental energy. Acceptance simply draws a line under the negativity. Then you ask the key sage question. What does this make possible? Or, what is the opportunity here? That cancelled ride becomes a chance for that mobility workout you've been skipping. That tough loss becomes a source of invaluable data on how to improve. You shift your focus from what you can't do to what you can do.
And this leads to the third part of the plan. Practice active ownership. This is about relentlessly focusing on what you can control. You can't always control the final result, but you can almost always control your effort, attitude, and execution. Get your satisfaction from those things. And after every single training session, log three things that went well. It can be a feeling, a fact, anything. I held my pace on that last interval. I didn't give up when it got hard. I was grateful for the sunshine. This builds a library of evidence against the victim's lies.
And finally, you have to learn to apply that empathy you have for others to yourself, but in the right way. There is a huge difference between self-pity and self-compassion. Self-pity, the voice of the victim, says, "Poor me, I'm stuck and this is unfair." Self-compassion, the voice of the sage, says, "This is really hard right now and I'm struggling. I will treat myself with kindness as I work to grow from this." And sometimes that self-compassion includes the tough love that holds you accountable, because it knows without a doubt that you are capable of so much more.
It all comes back to a central theme we discuss so often here. Your happiness, your performance, your experience, it is your responsibility. An athlete understands you don't get fit by reading about it. You have to do the workouts. You have to show up. Mental fitness is exactly the same.
It is. You are either moving forwards or backwards. There is no middle ground. Too many of us let these inner saboteurs strip the joy from the very sports we chose because we love them. You have the power to change your inner game. Your happiness isn't out there, dependent on your next race result. It's right here, inside you, waiting to be cultivated.
There's a famous quote from Henry Ford that seems to fit perfectly here. Whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. The question is, what will you choose to think? If you haven't yet taken a saboteur assessment to uncover your own unique saboteur profile, then please head over to mindfitathlete.com/discover and we'll set you up with an assessment invite. You'll also have an option of a free 30-minute one-on-one debrief of your report.
And if this conversation resonated with you and you're interested in diving deeper, the Positive Intelligence 7-Week Foundation course is a powerful program designed to build these mental muscles rigorously. It's about taking these concepts and turning them into a daily practice. We'd love to have you join us.
You can also find more information about that on our website, mindfitathlete.com/foundations. For now, from all of us here at the MindFit Athlete, thank you for listening.
Have an awesome day, everyone. I've been Emily.
And I've been Scott. Take care and happy training.
Thank you for tuning in to the Mind Fit Athlete podcast. If you've enjoyed today's material and you'd like to dive deeper, our Mind Fit Athlete community is waiting for you over at mindfitathlete.com. That's where we take these insights and integrate them into our everyday lives. In fact, We're on a mission to help everyone build their mental fitness so they can choose happiness, thrive, and make a positive difference. We are building our mental fitness in sport and in life, and we'd absolutely love to have you join us.